Good evening. Go ahead and turn those down, if you will. It is good to be back with you here at Cambridge, and I'm excited to be here with you because of the excitement that you have had over the last couple of years with the work that is going on in Guyana. And so I'm very excited to be here and to once again share with you just a little bit of what is happening. And I appreciate the prayer that we may understand what is happening in the world. And one of the things that you'll see here tonight is that great things are happening in Guyana's part of the world. Great things are happening for the Lord's kingdom there, the Lord's church. And I want to share with you just a little bit of what went on in July of this past year, July the 11th through the 25th. And really, this particular trip was a little bit different than the many trips that Bob Long and I have made before. And what made this trip a little bit different is that for the first time in 13 years, we actually got some people to go with us. Now, I'm not saying that has never happened before. We have taken groups of teenagers and so on with us down there before, but it had been 13 years since we had been able to get anybody to go. Now, we had been close many times, but then something would happen in that person's family or that person's life that would keep them from going. So for the first time in 13 years, we was able to take two brethren with us. Brother Matt Dunbar is the young man that is pictured right here. This is Brother Matt. And this big fella, John recognized him. This is Todd Bradford. John remembered him as being a teacher of his daughter. He is a football coach at Frontier High School and a member of the Church of Christ in New Metamoris. Matt Dunbar is a member at the 6th and Washington Street Church of Christ in Marietta. And right now, he is the campus minister for a high university there in Athens, Ohio. Both of these brethren are experienced in going out of the country. Todd, a couple years ago, got to go to Costa Rica. This was actually his second trip to Guyana. He went to Guyana one year before with Brother David Newberry and worked in Kakwani. But we have known Todd for many, many years. He worked with us at a High Valley Christian youth camp, and he's always talked about going with Bob and I to see what our work is like on the Berbice River. Matt has gone to the Holy Land. He has gone to Europe and to Asia, and so he's very experienced with traveling outside of the country. And so we were so blessed to have these two gentlemen go with us, and they were a great aid in our work in Guyana. Bob has been going to Guyana for 22 years. This would be my 21st year of working in Guyana. The two of us have made about 43 trips to Guyana in those 20 years. And I've had people ask me, what's the hardest part about mission work? And I have to tell them the hardest part about mission work is coming back home and reporting to congregations who have sponsored us, just like Cambridge has done the last couple of years. What makes it so difficult is that many times, after 20-some years, you start to run out of ideas of how to present the material. This is what I do. This is part of my job, working with Guyana, is to go out and talk to our sponsoring congregations. And I do that several times throughout the year, and even go and share this message with congregations that send Brother Bob support. And so, my job to come up with these reports. And I'm going to be honest with you, I had a very difficult time coming up with an idea for this particular report. The theme for it. How do I get this news across? And I thought about it, and I thought about it, and I thought about it, and finally it kind of dawned on me. Of course, I'm the preacher for the Lower Paw Paw Church of Christ in Lower Salem, just outside of Marietta. And over the last 4 years, We have grown tremendously as a congregation. Now, I'm not saying this to pat us, pat Lower Paul on the back or anything of that nature, but simply to give you some background for this particular thing. In the last 4 years, we have baptized 46 new converts in the last 4 years. Our attendance has tripled at Lower Paul. In fact, just yesterday, we baptized our 46th convert. And each and every week, one of the things that the elders have impressed upon me is that, Tom, we always need to keep Guyana in front of the congregation. And so we do that. There's hardly a week that goes by, a Sunday that goes by, or a service that goes by in which we don't talk about Guyana in some way or pray about Guyana. And one of the things that I have noticed over the last couple of years with all of these new converts, when we talk about Guyana, we start to get some puzzled looks on people's faces. In fact, 2 years ago, one of our new converts, a dear sister in Christ, came up and she just said, Tom, what is Guyana? And when she asked that question, I thought, there is the theme. And so tonight, we want to share with you answers to that particular question. Because even here, friends, I'm sure that there are those who really don't know a lot about Guyana. And so perhaps you have asked yourself the question over the last 2 years, what is Guyana? Well, tonight we want to give you some answers to that question, and we want to incorporate some of the things that happened in July in answering those questions. And so let's answer the question here tonight. What is Guyana? And really, I believe the best place for us to begin would be for those who may not know the history of this work to give you just a very brief history of the work in Guyana. Here we have a picture of the village of Kakwani. Kakwani is on the Burbeast River, and it serves basically as our home base for this particular work. In 1996, Brother David Newberry, who at the time was at the Lubeck Church of Christ, and Brother Bob Long, they went into Guyana for the first time and in Kakwani for the first time, and they conducted a tent meeting in the National Square. Now, we have highlighted there the National Square. The National Square is kind of like, well, what you have across the street. It's kind of like the city park of Kakwani. And so they went in 1996, and they put up a big army tent, and they started to preach the gospel, and people would come in, and they would have overflow crowds every night. Well, at the end of that crusade, as the Guyanese call it, there were some precious souls who were baptized. And so the Lord's Church had its beginning in Kakwani in 1996. We would, over the next couple of years, build the meeting house for the Church of Christ in Kakwani. That meeting house is located right there, as we highlight it for you. In fact, here we have that is the preacher's home, and the meeting house is actually behind that grove of trees there. And this is where the meeting house stands even today. In 1997, the first year that I went, and in 1998, we moved the crusade from a tent in the National Square to the sports field and pavilion. The sports field and pavilion. Here is Kakwani High School. This is their sports field, and they play cricket there. They play what we would call soccer. They call it football. But all of those type of sports are played there, and there's a very large pavilion. And, of course, that pavilion is full of section after section of bleachers. I was trying to think today how many rows, and I know there's at least 25 rows of bleachers from the bottom to the top. And so we would have crusades, and every night we'd preach the gospel to 300, 400 people in those bleachers. That's not to count the number of people. Now, it gets dark there no matter what time of year it is, because it's only 100 miles from the equator. So it's lighter here now. Really doesn't change in Guyana. At 6 o'clock, it gets dark, no matter the time of year. And so we would have lights set up in the pavilion, and we would preach the gospel. And those lights would only shine out so far, and there would be hundreds of people standing out in what we call the darkness. In fact, we referred to them as the people standing in the dark, and they would listen to the gospel. We have no idea how many was standing out there. It could have been 100 or 200 that was standing there. But every night we would preach the gospel to them. In 1998, on the final night of our crusade, in amongst the people that was listening to the gospel was the Tishal of the Amerindian village Haruru Mission. Now, the Amerindians are the native people of Guyana. And Tishal is an Amerindian word which means very simply captain. He would be like the chief in our Native Americans tribes here in our country. And so he is the captain. He is elected to that post and he serves about 4 years, and then he can either run again or he can or somebody else would be elected. The Tishal, Brother Percy LaRose, approached us after the last crusade service. And he had with him his son, who was the member of the church there at Kakwani. And he came up to Bob and Dave and I, and he asked us if we would come to Haruru before we left and conduct a worship service. Well, welcome to the Amerindian village of Haruru Mission. The last Sunday of our trip in 1998, we conducted one worship service there at Haruru. At the end of that worship service, four precious souls were baptized, including the Tishal, Percy, and his wife, and two other precious souls. So four people were baptized that day. And in 1998, the Church of Christ at Haruru Arima had its beginning. We started to build a meeting house for them. And by 2000, that meeting house was complete. It is on the Arima side of the Burbese River. There is Haruru and Arima on the other side. We built on the Arima side simply because that land was given to us free by a member of the church there at Haruru. And so we finished that building in 2000. It was also that same year, after talking with Bob and Dave, that we decided that the work is growing, and so we need to divide the work up. There wasn't any problems. We are still friends to this very day. But we can see that the work was growing, and we couldn't just concentrate on one place and then maybe spend a little time in the other place. We had to spend as much time in each of those congregations. And so in 2000, Dave Newberry and Steve Fox remained in Kakwani and worked with the congregation there. And my best friend, Bob Long, and I would take over and work with the congregations on the Burbese River. In 2000, we hired a young man, Brother Wayne Sowers, who lived in Kakwani, to be our preacher. And he worked for us for about 10 years. He did a fantastic job. In fact, in 2004, because of his efforts of going into different villages, two more congregations of the Lord's Church had their beginning. Congregation at Bamboo, which is just 6 miles from Kakwani. Haruru, by the way, is 12 miles from Kakwani. And also in 2004, a third congregation was started in Kalkuni, which is 30 miles away from Kakwani. So you can see how in just a few years that work had grown and expanded. Bob and I work with the three congregations at Bamboo, Haruru, and Kalkuni. In 2011, Brother Wayne Sowers decided he was going to go on and do some other things, and so we hired Brother Mikey Lindy to be the preacher for the three congregations on the Burbese River. In fact, he was born and raised on the Burbese, born and raised in Kalkuni, and so people know him. For many years, he served as our assistant minister behind Brother Wayne Sowers, and in 2011, we asked him to become our full-time preacher. We met Brother Mikey in 1997 at one of the crusades that we had at the sports field. In fact, he was a part of a youth group at that time that we were working with. And I developed a friendship with Mikey. At that time, when I was much younger and maybe a little bit lighter, I did a lot of sports. In fact, I used to coach football at Fort Fry High School. Don't hate me for that. But that's where I used to coach football there. And so I would play basketball with Mikey. Mikey, just picture him. You can see from that picture there. He's about 6'3", 6'4". He is skinny as a rail, and he can play basketball. I'm 6'1", in my best day, or 6 foot in my best day. And so we would play basketball. He'd beat me to death every time, but we had a lot of fun doing it. And I became friends with Mikey, and a few months later, he obeyed the gospel. And he has been a faithful servant, a faithful member of the Lord's church ever since. He has grown, and it has been thrilling to watch his growth. That youth group he was a part of, he soon became the leader of it. He then became involved in leading the worship service. He became a talented song leader, still is to this day, and started preaching. And now he is our full-time minister at all three congregations. This is his family. He married V.V., who also is from the village of Kalkuni. This is his oldest daughter, Makila. This is V.V. Ann. And this is his youngest daughter, Michaela, who they call Fatty Boom Boom. They're a wonderful family. And he has done a great, great work for us. And so that's just a little brief history. What is Guyana? Well, let's talk about Guyana in general. Now, the reason I want to talk about Guyana in general is that one of the first questions I get when I report, when I came home in 1997, my first Sunday back, I was preaching for the church in Bel Air, Ohio at the time. I walked into the foyer of that first Sunday after I got back, and a good brother come up to me, and he said, "How is Africa?" I said, "Brother, I don't know." And he said, "Well, didn't you go to Guyana?" I said, "Yes, sir, I did." "Well, isn't Guyana in Africa?" And I said, "No, sir, it is not." Where is Guyana located? Anybody know? Exactly right. It is located on the South American continent. In fact, Guyana is on the northeast coast of South America, and there we've highlighted it for you. It is that little country there in red, if you would. And as you can see, when you compare it to Brazil and to Chile and to Argentina and Venezuela, as you can see, it is one of the smaller countries in South America. In fact, Guyana, the total land mass of that country is just 83,000 square miles. And so you can tell that it is a very small country. It is bordered to the west by Venezuela. And none of the problems in Venezuela have come into Guyana. And so I know later on when I open up the questions, that's going to be one of the first questions because everybody has asked that. Venezuela problems have not come into Guyana, not as yet. It is bordered by to the southwest and the south by Brazil, and by Suriname to the east, and in the northeast it is bordered by the Atlantic Ocean. Now you see this big blob, black blob, standing on that wall. That is Todd Bradford, and he is standing on the sea wall. Now, somebody might ask the question, why a seawall? Well, that seawall, believe it or not, runs an entire 280 miles along the coast of Guyana. And it protects the capital city of Guyana, which is Georgetown, and that entire 280-mile square coastline. It protects it from the ocean waters. Because that entire area is somewhere between 7 and 3 feet below sea level. And so twice a day, that wall keeps the ocean water from entering into the capital city or along the coastline. And so it protects the city and the coast from the ocean waters. Waters. Guyana is actually an Amerindian term. We shared with you just a moment ago, that's the original citizens, the original people of Guyana. It is an Amerindian term which means the land of many waters. And it is called that not only because of the 280 miles along the coastline, but it is called the land of many waters because there is actually over 50 rivers in Guyana. Rivers, streams, and creeks. In fact, all of that water makes up about 7,000 square miles. And so it is truly the land of many waters. In Guyana, there are four major rivers. The Essequibo, the Corentyne River, the Berbice River, and the Demerara River. All of which are on the same side of the country, on the eastern side of the country. And all four of these major rivers are tidal rivers. Now, in case you don't know what that means, very simply, they are affected by the ocean tide. And so twice a day when the ocean tide goes up, the water level on these four rivers go up. Twice a day when the tide goes down, the water level on the rivers go down. And so they're all four tidal rivers. Our work that Bob Long and I do, and even the work that David Newberry and Steve Fox does, the work in Kakwani is along the Berbice River. Our work is on the Berbice River altogether. In fact, it is the third of the four largest rivers in Guyana, 370 miles from the mouth in New Amsterdam to beyond Kakwani. 370 miles. We work with three congregations, Bamboo, Haruru, and Kalkuni. The river is our only source of transportation to get to those three villages. There is no road that goes into Bamboo. There's no road that goes into Kalkuni. There is a road that goes into Haruru, but it goes through a private mining company, and we would have to receive special permission. And right now, the mine is operated and owned by the Russian government. And so we're not going to get a whole lot of cooperation there. And so we travel up and down the Berbice River. This is the Miss Emma. The Miss Emma is our fifth of the boats that we have built in the last 20 years. Our fifth boat. It is 20 feet by 5 feet wide. And it is basically a speedboat. Even, yes, that size, it's a speedboat. And it takes us, not only us, but Mike and his family to Haruru. It takes them to our fastest growing and our biggest working congregation at Kalkuni and to our youngest congregation at Bamboo Landing. What is Guyana? Well, let's talk about Guyana economically. At one time, Guyana was one of the poorest countries in South America. In fact, just a few years ago, the World Bank ranked Guyana as the 33rd poorest. Not the poorest, but the 33rd poorest country in all of the world. Now, just to give you some idea of how poor Guyana has been, let's talk about the average income per person. Anybody want to take a guess of what the average income per person may be? Anybody want to guess? Well, the average income per person is far less than the average income per person of the people that are sitting here tonight. Far less. In fact, the average income per person in Guyana is just $4,000 U.S. That's the average income. Now, of course, there are those who make a little bit more, and there's those who make a little bit less, but this is the average income. And so it is a very poor country. But all of that may be changing. In fact, Guyana could very well become one of the richest countries in all the world. Now, you may wonder, well, how in the world is that going to happen? To go from 33rd to one of the richest countries. Well, let's answer that question in this way. Guyana is known for many of its natural resources, resources that it ships into other countries and sells them and so on, and they make money from that. They're known for their natural resources. Resources like that of timber, resources like that of sugar cane, resources like that of rice, resources like that of bauxite, and even resources like that of gold. I don't know if anybody's ever seen the television show, I think it's on Discovery, called Gold Rush. Well, just two or three years ago, one of their crews went down into Guyana to mine gold, thinking that they would get rich there, but they ran into a little thing called the government. And the government kept them from becoming rich with Guyanese gold. Bauxite. You mean, what in the world is bauxite? This is actually a bauxite drying plant owned by the Russians at Haruru. Bauxite is a mineral that is found in the ground. It's kind of clay-like looking. And bauxite is used to make aluminum. Anything made out of aluminum is made with bauxite. And so the bauxite is taken out of the ground. It is brought to this drying plant. They run it through the dryer. They put it onto barges, and they ship it to New Amsterdam, and then it goes over to Russia and goes out from there. Those are their natural resources. But just recently, a new natural resource has been discovered. Anybody want to guess what that is? No?
Oil.
In 2015, oil was discovered off the coast of Guyana. Oil was discovered. Experts said at one time that it could be one of the largest oil discoveries in all of the Caribbean. ExxonMobil has updated that. And they have said that it could become one of the richest oil reserves in the entire world. Right now, there are 12 oil rigs, 10 oil rigs, 12 areas, 12 reserves. They haven't discovered oil on the final two, but they have discovered oil on 10 of those. And right now, all 10 of those areas have a rig just like this one, and it is pumping oil each and every day. The experts at ExxonMobil have said that this year alone, they're going to pump 120,000 barrels of oil. They have gone on to say that by 2025, when everything is working to its fullest capacity, it will go from 120,000 barrels to 750,000 barrels of oil per day. Now, just to give you some idea, I checked just before I come here. The current price of oil per barrel today is $60.18. So you figure that 750,000 barrels at that price today, they will make $45,135,000 per day in Guyana. Now I know you're thinking, wow. Wow. Huh? ExxonMobil. ExxonMobil owns the majority of it. But that will be money that Guyana makes. This is in their territory. Venezuela tried to take it, but the world court said, no, it is not in your territory. It is in Guyana territory. And so Guyana will look at making a lot of money every day. Now, somebody might say, okay, what are they going to do with it? That's a good question. So Bob and I have asked, we know some folks in the broadcasting area, and know some folks in the Amerindian ministry, and we've asked, what do you plan on doing with all that money? And one of the things that we've been overwhelmingly told is that they are going to spend that money on improvements in the infrastructure. In particular, highway or road improvements. This is the Linden Highway. We travel this highway at least twice every trip. When we are going to Kekwani, when we arrive at Chetty Jagan International Airport, we travel the Linden Highway to the city of Linden, And from Linden, we go into Kewaunee. And so we travel this highway going in and coming out. The Linden Highway is actually a rarity in Guyana. And you might wonder, why is it a rarity? Well, there's over 5,000 miles of roads in Guyana, but there's only 600 miles that are paved. Only 600 miles. And so the Linden Highway is a part of that 600 miles. The majority of the roads in Guyana look just like this. I'm from West Virginia. Don't hold that against me. But I'm from West Virginia. And I have traveled many a West Virginia backcountry road. And this doesn't hold, those roads don't hold a candle to this road. This is the Linden Highway. It goes from the village of Linden, the second largest city in Guyana, to Kewaunee, which is about 60 miles. It is hot, dusty, dirty road. And it takes us about 2.5 hours to make that trip. That's when the road looks like this. But John, the sad thing is, the road doesn't always look like this. Sometimes it looks like this. And sometimes it looks like this. And when it looks like this, that 2.5 hour trip becomes a 4.5 to 6 hour trip. So if the government wants to spend part of that money to make this road look like this road, then you know what? We're all for it. And it will bless the work tremendously. Because we'll be able to get into Kewaunee very quickly, which means we can get to work quicker. What is Guyana? Guyana is a country of extreme weather. In fact, I can describe the weather in Guyana in 3 words. The first would be hot. This is a picture of the capital city of Georgetown. And the average temperature, let me just share with you a couple of average temperatures. The average temperature during the warmer months in Georgetown, which is from May to October, the average temperature is 82 degrees. The average temperature during the colder months, which is November to April, is 81 degrees. And so it only goes down 1 degree. Now, somebody might say, well, you know, Tom, that really don't sound too bad. We have 80-degree weather around here, so how can you say that's hot? Well, that's not necessarily the story on the Berbice River. You see, the Berbice River is in the middle of the rainforest. And the Berbice River, the temperature in the rainforest, is consistently in triple digits. On this particular day, the temperature was 105 degrees. As you can see from my thermostat, it goes up to 140. There have been several days that it has gone beyond 120 degrees. In fact, there was one day a few years ago that we will never forget. There was one day that it actually made it up to 135 degrees on the Berbice River. And so it's hot. Well, we say we can describe the weather in 3 words. Well, the other two is wet and dry. By the way, you may wonder, why is it cooler in Georgetown? You've got to remember, Georgetown is along the coast. And so you have the ocean breeze that comes in constantly, and it keeps that temperature down. But once you get away from Georgetown, further into the bush, the temperature goes up. The weather in Guyana is also wet and dry. There's your 3 words, hot, wet, and dry. Now somebody might say, no, wait a minute, how can Guyana both be wet and dry? Well, how many seasons do we have in our country? How many seasons do we have? 4. We have 4 seasons. We have spring, summer, fall, and winter. That's not necessarily the case in Guyana. In fact, in Guyana, there's really only 2 seasons, the rainy season and the dry season, both of which happen twice a year. The first dry season is between December and January each year. The first rainy season. The first dry season is right now. In fact, it's coming to an end here in just a day or so. That dry season is February and March. The second rainy season, which by the way is the longest season of the year in Guyana, is from April to August, so 5 months. The second dry season is September through November. Now let's talk about that second rainy season. We said just a moment ago that it's the longest season of the year. In fact, the most severe weather happens during these 5 months. In Guyana per year, a total of 85 inches of rain will fall. Now, by the way, I check for this area, Cambridge. In Cambridge, you get about 37 inches of rain per year. Right around there. We do two in Lower Salem, we do two in Marietta. In fact, it's really 37 inches really for the whole state of Ohio. That's in 1 year. In 5 months, 50% of that 85 inches of rain will fall April through August. So altogether, we're talking about 42 inches of rain will fall during that time. That's a lot of rain. And when you take in consideration July, which is a part of the rainy season, you take that in consideration and you stop and you think, okay, now wait a minute. The Berbice is also a tidal river. Then you see that another answer to this question, what is Guyana, is the fact that Guyana is a country that has challenges to our work. And one of the challenges is the weather, especially during those 5 months. When you add 42 inches of rain to the Berbice, plus being a tidal river, then that presents us many times with the problem of flooding. When we arrived on the Berbice River in July, the river was in flood stage. And it was far above flood stage. And that causes a problem. Not only for the work, but that is a big problem for the people who live in Kakwani and the people who live along the Berbice River. Now you say, well, we're only talking about a little flood, Tom. How's that a big problem? Well, it's a problem for four reasons. Number one, when we have a flood around here, and every once in a while you get a flood out here on the interstate, don't you? Every once in a while you get a flood. And when you have a flood here or a flood down home around Lower Salem, it comes up and then it goes back down. But in Guyana, the floodwaters stay around for weeks, sometimes months, before they go down. We were there for over two weeks in July, and the floodwaters only came down just about 6 inches during that entire time. And so it takes weeks, it takes months. And that causes problems for the people of Guyana. This is Brother John's home. Brother John's lives in Kakwani. He's a member of the church there in Kakwani. His home is over 100 yards away from the banks of the Berbice River. But yet when it floods, the waters surround his house. And the water is underneath his home. In fact, the water is covering the main road there on the waterfront. This is called Waterfront Road. And so no vehicles, no buses can come down and help transport people to different places. And so that is a problem for them. This is our meeting house at Bamboo Landing. It is in, guess what, the flood zone. And so whenever it floods, the building gets flooded. The building had a hard time this past rainy season. As you can see, the storms have done a little bit of damage to it, and we're going to work to fix that. But with these floodwaters comes not only water, but comes caiman, and piranha and anacondas and other things into that building. And so many times we cannot even worship when the flood waters are up. And number four, it's a problem because the people who live along the river are deathly afraid of flood waters. They are afraid of the current of the flood waters. This is Sister Elsie. Sister Elsie is a member of the church in Kalkuni. They live right along the river. She has been a member of the church for many, many years. This is her husband, Vernon. Vernon, by the way, is the brother to Brother Johns that I shared a picture of his home. This is Brother Johns' brother, Vernon Johns. And we met with Vernon several years ago. He was sick in his sick bed, and Sister Elsie asked Bob and I if we would come and pray for him. And so we went into their home, and we prayed for him. And several years later, he remembered us. And he asked that we come and study with him. And so I was very happy to go and study with him this past July. And we sat down, and after a few minutes of studying the gospel, he said, "Brother Tom, I want to be baptized." Well, one of the great things about working along the Verbeese is our baptistry is right there. And so I said, "Well, brother, let's go." And so we started walking down towards the Verbeese River, and by that time, Mikey and Bob and Todd and Matt showed back up. They were doing another study someplace else. And I asked Brother Vernon, I said, "Who would you like to baptize you?" And before he could answer, Sister Elsie spoke up and said, "Vernon, you let Brother Tom baptize you. He's good at it, and he's a lot stronger than Brother Mikey." She was afraid that he would get swept away by the floodwaters and that I could hold on to him. Well, probably the best thing I can do would be a floating device as we're swept down the river. But they're afraid of the water. In fact, in the years past, floodwaters have kept our numbers down at our crusades because they are simply afraid to come out and to cross the river when it is in flood stage. We went to God with this problem. God helps us to meet challenges. And you know what, friends? I really appreciate so very much the promises that God has made us. Here's one promise in particular. This is Isaiah, the 41st chapter, verse 10. This is the English Standard Version. God said, "Fear not." Why not? "Because I am with you. Be not dismayed, for I am your God. I will strengthen you. I will help you. I will uphold you with my righteous right hand." God makes us some very precious promises. He promises us that He's with us. And He promises us that He is going to help us in times of need. He promises to answer prayers. And we know that in several passages in the New Testament. 1 John chapter 5. In John chapter 15, and also in Mark chapter 11, verse 24, Jesus said, "Therefore I tell you, whatsoever you ask in prayer, believe that you have received it, and it will be yours." God has promised to answer our prayers. And so we put all things in God's hands. And He was there. And He did help us. He was with us. He did answer our prayers. And for the first time in many years, our attendance went way up instead of way down during the flood. Even with the rain and the flooding, with the Father's help, great things happened. We had two crusades, one in Kalkuni, the other in Kekwane. Both of them were well attended. In Hariri. The crusade that we conducted in Hariri, as you can tell from the picture, the meeting house was full every night. God helped us, even with the floodwaters and the rain, as we were able to make over 50 visits in the 9 days that we were there. God helped us even with the rain as we were able to do 12 personal Bible studies, even with the bad weather. Which leads us to another answer. What is Guyana? Guyana is a country that is white already to the harvest. We read the very familiar story about Jesus and the Samaritan woman at the well in John, the 4th chapter. In John chapter 4 and verse 35, Jesus, in speaking to his disciples, said, "Lift up your eyes and look on the fields, for they are white, all ready to the harvest." Now the harvest that Jesus was speaking about here is a spiritual harvest. And he was trying to tell his disciples that many of the Samaritans were ready to come and to believe on him and to follow him. And many of them did. We continue reading, beginning in verse 39. "And many of the Samaritans of that city believed on him for the saying of the woman which testified, 'He told me all that I ever did.' And so the Samaritans were coming to him, and they besought him that he would tarry with them, and he abode with them 2 days. And many more believed because of his own word." Guyana is also white unto the harvest, as can be seen by the people ready to hear the gospel, by the numbers who came out to our crusades, to the number of members who asked us to come in just to sit down and answer a question or two for them. We can see that Guyana is white unto the harvest in the number of people who asked us to come and to share the gospel and tell them what the gospel had to say about their life, like this young couple here. And many in Guyana are ready to obey. Vernon Johns obeyed the gospel. Latoya LaRose obeyed the gospel. This is Sister Gloria. Sister Gloria lives down in Calcuna, and she was restored. Now, she had been baptized many years ago in New Amsterdam and the congregation there. But she fell away from the church. In fact, we asked her, "How long have you been away?" And she wouldn't answer us. She just said, "It's been a long time." After sitting down and studying with her, she decided to make things right with God. And so she was restored. Odesta Gastang and her son, Dylan. Odesta is the woman there in blue, and her son is sitting in the yellow shirt, I believe it is, just a couple of people down from her. They were baptized in the Jesus Christ. This is Radhita Lakshman. Radhita is a good example of someone that they may not obey the gospel the first time you approach them, but you got to keep on going back, and you got to keep on trying. We met Radhita. She lives in Haruru. We met her 3 years ago. We were invited into their home, and so we went into Radhita's home, and Brother Bob studied with her. And at the end of that, she said, "Brethren," she said, "I'm just not ready. Just not ready." And so Mikey would keep on trying to study with her until we come back. 1 year later, we went back to her a second time, and once again, Bob studied with her. And at the end of that study, she said, on Old Year's Day, they celebrate the old year, not the new year. She said, "On Old Year's Day, I will be baptized." "Well, what are you waiting for?" "Well, I just want to wait till Old Year's Day." And so Old Year's Day came and went. Mikey was there ready to baptize her, and she never showed up. And so this past July, we went back, and this time Bob said, "Tom, why don't you go talk to her?" And so we set up a time for her to come to the worship house. And when she walked in, Mikey and I got there several minutes before, and we sat down and we waited. And when she walked in the front door, I stood up and I went, "Happy New Year, Radhita." And she said, "Okay, Brother Tom." And after we studied for a few minutes, she said, "Brother Tom, I'm now ready." And we walked down to the river, and she was baptized. Out of the 12 studies that we did in July, Three were restorations, five were baptisms. And we'll bring you up to date in just a couple of minutes. But that brings us to one other answer to this question. I know many of you are probably wondering, okay, you've now talked to us for going on 40 minutes here. What about the television? What about the television? Well, the final answer to this question is that Guyana is a country that we need to continue to be patient with. When I was here 1 year ago and I shared with you an update on the television work, I shared with you that we had come to an agreement with NCN, which is the National Communication Network, one of the major broadcasting networks in Guyana. We came to an agreement with them that they would allow us to use their tower, and that would expand our viewing area to 60 square miles. They agreed that they would provide us with a nonprofit organization rating, and that they will also issue us a broadcasting license at their expense, and that they would do the renewal costs at their expense. All we would do in exchange would provide them with new equipment, which we were willing to do. That was the agreement that we had. Parts of that agreement are no longer in effect. In fact, major portions of that agreement are no longer in effect. We can still use their tower, but now it'll be at a cost. We can no longer obtain the nonprofit through them, license through them. Now somebody might say, well, why are they treating you so bad? Well, it's not NCN. What has happened, very simply, is that Parliament passed a law. The president of Guyana is a man by the name of David Granger. And he is a major general in the Guyanese army. He's retired now. And he was elected a couple years ago, and he has been great for the country. He has been cleaning the country up. It's cleaned up a lot of corruption and so on. And so he's really got a lot of backbiting because of that, but he's cleaning up the country. He wanted to have a communication source in every village, either television or radio. And so that's why we, at one point, received a good deal. He wanted this to happen. But Parliament wanted to make sure that things didn't get out of control. And so they passed a law to regulate the broadcasting licenses. In Romans chapter 13, let every person be subject to the governing authorities. For there is no authority except from God, and those that exist have been instituted by God. What we're being told here very simply, friends, is that we've got to obey the laws of the land. And so that means the laws in Guyana. In order to have a television station, according to the new laws in Guyana, we would have to hire a lawyer, and it must be a Guyanese lawyer, in order to file for the nonprofit status. That's going to be money. According to the new Guyanese law, we will need to apply for the license. We need to apply to the License Bureau and pay all the fees ourselves. And so there is more money. According to new Guyanese law, we would have to provide a corporate address. A residential address will not meet their laws. And so that means we would have to either rent or purchase property in Guyana, set up a corporation, and actually have mail come to that corporation. That is more money. And also, according to new Guyanese law, we would have to have a board of directors. Now, with NCN, we only had to have one Guyanese member of the board of directors, which was going to be Brother Mikey. But now, according to this new law, we need to have a board of directors that need to have paid Guyanese, plural, on that board. And so that's more money. We've got to count the cost. And that's a very scriptural idea. For which of you desiring to build a tower does not first sit down and count the cost, whether he has enough to complete it? Right now, we're looking at the cost. And so the idea of the television station right now is on hold. Now, we do have another idea, and we're going to give it a try. But that would limit our viewing area and so on, but we're going to look into it. Now, I know that that is very discouraging. It's very discouraging, you know, to think that all of a sudden we were going to have television, now we're not going to have television. But friends, the thing to remember, even though that is discouraging, is that great things are happening in Guyana. And great things are happening, excuse the expression, this is my expression, but great things are happening the old-fashioned way. Well, what do we mean by that? Well, we already told you that we had 5 baptisms. You can add 2 more to that. 2 more from those that we were studying with. And Mikey has been studying with the other 2 over the last couple of months. 2 more studies he's doing. Since 2011, there have been over 60 baptisms just in the 3 congregations on the Burbese River. All of which have come from sitting down face to face, sharing the gospel with people. In 4 days, Bob and I are leaving for Guyana. We're not going to have any big crusades going on. We're not going to go to Georgetown and work on the television. What we're going to do is go to Hubambu, to Haruru, Kalkuni, and go through the village door by door and trying to set up as many personal Bible studies as we can. And do it the old-fashioned way. Great things are happening. And with God's help, great things will continue to happen. Let's go to God in prayer, shall we? Our most gracious Heavenly Father, we are so very thankful for this day. And Father, we're thankful for this congregation and the excitement that they have had over the last couple of years for our work. And we're so blessed to have them as helping us in this effort. And Father, we ask your blessings upon John who works here and every member here. May they grow in their faith and their strength. But we also pray thanking you for Guyana and the great things that continue to happen there. And we pray, Father, that they will continue to happen. We pray that souls will continue to be touched. We pray for Mikey and his family. May he continue to have good health and be able to continue to do the great work that he is doing. Be with us, Father, as we go on our trip here in just a few days. We know that you will. It is a great blessing and privilege to serve you in this work. These things we pray in Jesus' name. I want to take just a couple. Is there any questions?
Are you worried that the prosperity that may be coming to the country will be a hindrance to the gospel?
Yes. John, we've been asked that question at every congregation we have shared that with. We certainly hope that is not the case. And one thing that we are looking at is just really how much is going to filter down to Kakwani and the Burbese River villages.
It won't happen overnight.
It's not going to happen overnight.
It didn't happen in this country overnight.
No, it's not going to happen overnight. What comes with it? Exactly right. What comes with it? And so it is something that we have thought about. But right now,
we got a foot.
Yeah. Yeah. Any other questions?
Kind of on the same thing. Is that one of those things where if the money starts trickling down to where you guys are at, you would have more money to pay and then you could get that broadcasting license and still go with the DVI idea?
Yep, maybe. Yeah, maybe. We really don't know what the future holds for this. You know, we're looking right now at the present. And at the present, when you look at Lower Pawpaw, you know, we, even though we have grown tremendously, we're still less than 100 members. Waverly is around 100 members, even with your all's help. Can we afford to pay out a big payday? And we don't know exactly, because it's very hard to come up with the information. We were able to find out because Brother Mikey, who seems to have an aunt and an uncle that lives in every village in Kekwani, had an aunt who lived in Georgetown, and she was a lawyer. But she can't help us because now she works for the Supreme Court of Guyana, and so she doesn't take any cases like that. But she was able to tell us the information I shared with you is the information that we got from her as to what the new law contains. And so just to get a lawyer, we have estimated that's going to be around $1,000 just to get him on retainer. What it's going to cost as far as the court costs and things of that nature, we don't know. The actual price of the license, we have heard anywhere from I'm going to put it in American terms. We have heard anywhere from $1,500, which if that's the case, I'll pay that myself, to anywhere near $1 million just to get the broadcast license. That's how big a spectrum we have been told. So we really don't know what to believe. So what do we do? Do we spend $1,000 to find out that we can't afford it? Not that I know of. Not that I know of. And then you've got to have the cost of renewing that license every year, and we don't know how much that's going to be. That's why the agreement we had with NCN, and what they were doing was not illegal. That was the law at the time. But Parliament changed it to regulate so things would not get out of control. And so what they've done, they have stifled our effort in this. But we're still looking. We haven't given up yet. Still looking. Any other questions? Yes, please. The church buildings? Yes. The only church building that is in the area that floods is the church building at Bamboo. And we did not have any say on where that building was built. It's Amerindian. It's an Amerindian village mission. And so they tell us where we can build. And so when we build the next time, we've already got permission to build a little bit higher up. Kalkuni, we talked about being the hardest working congregation. They have outgrown two buildings and have just finished their third building that they have done on their own. On their own. And that's how they wanted to do it. All we have done is maybe provided them with about 10 gallons of gasoline, and that's about it. This third building they made out of block, and so it is going to last a little bit longer. And they made it so that they can expand this building. And I have no doubt that within a couple of years, they'll fill it, and then they'll knock out the back wall and expand it. That's just how hardworking they are. Any other question? Let me say this. We are making a trip on Thursday. We can and need any help that we can get. One thing that we are looking at this particular time, not only help with that trip, but we're also looking for another congregation or an individual who will help support Brother Mikey. Brother Mikey right now makes $500 a month. That's it. $500 a month. Now, you may think, well, how terrible that, you know, why don't you all pay him a little bit more? That is actually the same salary that somebody makes working in the mine or working in the timber industry. And so it is very consistent with everybody else. He is not the richest man in the country. He is not the poorest man in the country. We like to think he's right there in the middle. But he does have three growing girls. And all of you who have had teenagers, and if you just happen to have all girl teenagers, you know the challenges that is in front of him. I feel sorry for him every time. I come from a house that had all boys. My family had three boys and one girl, and I wanted to have just the girl, and that was it. So I kept on trying until we had the girl, and now I wish I didn't have the girl. He's got a lot of problems. And so if any congregation or anybody would like to help him, a $50, $100 a month, please let me know. We're really trying to find some people so that we can raise his pay a little bit. So if you want to help, please let me know. We want to extend the invitation. If we have anybody here tonight who needs to respond and come to make things right with the Lord, or perhaps you're here and you've yet to obey the gospel, why not come right now while together we stand and we sing?